reflections on the Dhamma. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, dhammang saranang gacchami, sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. So here we are today, another Friday has arrived, and started doing these kind of video recordings. I think this is the way people do things now, and I've had all kinds of interesting experiences trying to record videos. Sometimes you'll be like a recording and nobody's around, and then like a whole family shows up and starts like playing frisbee. Or actually, I've been at this park in Pickering recording some videos or talks, and I've seen the same guy with his dog three times, at three different times of the day, and it's actually turned out to be a friend of Bhante Tiratana's, one of the people who met him in Thailand. So, small world. But anyways, all that aside, this is one of the kind of interesting things, you know, when technology changes and people adopt these particular means of communication, then we have to try to do our best to adapt to them in an appropriate way. So I think most people have heard me say that, you know, for maybe when Facebook, this kind of Facebook first came out, I was totally, you know, freaked out about using it. I was like, well, I don't want, you know, I don't know if I want people on the internet like knowing what I look like and, you know, what my photo is and all this kind of thing. But now it's been around for, you know, 10, 15 years or something like that. And it seems like this is just the way that people these days are communicating. So I think that there's a young fellow who I know, he's very maybe in high school. And I don't even know if people use their phones to like call each other anymore. So I remember when there were these kind of like rotary phones. When I was a kid, you had to push your finger into this socket and pull it around, and it went tuk, 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 tuk. And then touch tone phones came out. So there we have it, starting to get a bit old here. But anyways, this is the way it goes. You know, there are these kind of what we might call temporal conditions. You know, it's kind of temporal ways that people do things, temporal ways that things are accomplished. And these are constantly changing. Yeah. Actually, pre-industrial revolution, these things would change a lot more slowly. Yeah. So, I mean, there was technological change, but you'd have an age like the Stone Age, where people were using stone tools to do things, and that would last thousands and thousands of years. And you'd have the Bronze Age, where people discovered bronze and started riding around in chariots, you know, and, you know, have bronze weapons. And these people would conquer people without bronze weapons. And that age lasted for a while, too. Then you ended up with the Iron Age. And people got these iron implements, and they were able to cultivate land that was really hard, kind of packed dirt. They were able to turn it up, and they were able to farm and produce a lot more food than they were able to before. And this age also lasted for a while, and basically it was kind of iron implements, iron tools that, my understanding anyway, one of the things that really pushed out most hunter-gatherer societies to the fringes. Yeah. And then after the Iron Age, I can't remember what it was after that, maybe it was the Industrial Age. And then after the Industrial Age, we have the Information Age. And now that we're in the Information Age, I don't know what age comes next. I may or may not be alive to see it, but from the Industrial Age to the Information Age was like 50 years. You know? So we'll see what the next age is, but it might be here in another 10 or 15 years. Who knows? You know, maybe some, I don't know, robot age or something. You know, maybe robots, people have these kind of robots and they can do stuff with them. I don't know. I heard that that's coming up. But the point of all of this is that these kind of things are temporal conditions, you know? People accomplish their aims in the past using stone tools. And then from stone tools, people accomplish them with bronze tools. From bronze tools with iron tools. From iron tools to something else, and then industrial tools, mass assembly. From mass assembly, we're now on to information. And all of these means, these things are means that people use to accomplish things externally. These are ways that people try to secure a material future for themselves. They try to secure a source of happiness, source of wealth that will see them through. And of course, this is something important to think about. Right? I mean, we all, to a certain extent, we all subsist on physical food, right? If we don't eat for one day, we get really hungry. If we don't eat for 4 hours, sometimes we can get really hungry. If we don't drink for one day, we get really thirsty. If we don't drink for 7 days, we might not be here. And so these kind of things, these ways of securing our material future, material benefits, these are actually important things for humans to think about in general, for us to think about in general, which is why we have this evolution of iron to bronze, stone to bronze, bronze to iron, iron to industry, industry to information. Kind of all these different ways that we try to secure our material future and make it better for an expanding population, for expanding resources, these kind of things. But on top of these temporal ways, these ways that people accomplish this are constantly changing, depending on the amount of resources they have, depending on what they're looking for. Sometimes they get better, and sometimes they get worse. But the point of it all is that they change. So the time will come for me, inevitably, maybe it's, you know, when the young kids are coming up doing something with their robots, and I'll have to go and ask them, like, you know, how do you work this robot? Like, I can't I can't get this robot to do what I want, you know? I remember when we used to have, computers with keyboards, you know, whatever they have now. You know? And so that will change. You know, I'll become somebody who, no longer knows the temporal ways to accomplish things. But then there's also these things that we might call, like, non-temporal. There's principles behind the things that lead people to happiness, and lead people to what you might call success and failure, lead people to good and beneficial results and bad and negative results. And these kind of principles operate in the background all the time, no matter what the temporal age is. Doesn't matter if it's a stone age, iron age, information age, robot age, whatever age it is. And this is kind of similar. I mean, we can learn this from the principles in science, you know. Whatever kind of course, they've found some really cool stuff with quantum physics, but whatever kind of zany machines they come up with, new kind of complex machines, all these things operate on physical laws. They're underpinned by these physical laws. Based on these physical laws, scientists are able to manipulate conditions to create these fantastic machines to achieve their temporal ends. And in the same way, the scientists are able to do this, to achieve their temporal ends, by knowing the principles behind things so they can adapt them appropriately. When we know the principles behind which our mind operates, then we can adapt those principles appropriately. Not the principles, sorry. We can adapt our actions in certain situations appropriately to achieve the ends we want to achieve. Now, this isn't the Buddhist teaching. These ends that we want to achieve aren't like new promotion or faster car, whatever. That's what the temporal aspect is for. But the principles behind these things are the things that lead us to happiness, to good and wholesome states of mind, and things that lead us to bad and unwholesome states of mind. Now, the interesting thing about this is that just like you might say quantum physics, these big physical laws, you know, they seem kind of very, unchanging, you know, difficult to, ever bypass them. They have this other part called quantum physics where all this crazy stuff happens at the bottom level, at the very small level. And these two things obviously interact somehow. You know? Somehow they do. And in the same way, the interesting thing is that our quest to achieve happiness actually interacts with our ability to achieve temporal aims. These two things come together, not totally separate. Yeah. So actually, it's interesting, when I was living at a monastery near Ottawa, I went on a walk with a guy. I used to like to go out on walks, and they'd have new guests come to this monastery. It was very kind of remote, at the end of a road, and about an hour and a half from the nearest large city, and then 4 hours from Toronto. And so people couldn't just pop in there like they could here. They had to go there to stay. And so when they went there to stay, you know, I was a monk there, and I used to like to go and say hello to them. And if they were, you know, sometimes if they were around my age, we got along, I'd go out on walks for them. And so I met this one guy there once, and we got to talking, and it turned out that he was a rapper. And he'd done these shows with these kind of rap groups that were really big in my day. But there you go, another kind of temporal thing. I don't think they were that big by the time he came around, because he was opening for them and stuff. But in my day, they were humongous. And he asked me this question. He's like, "So what do you think about the law of attraction?" And so I thought what he was talking about was, okay, you know, people with similar personalities get along. So I was like, yeah, you know, that sounds good. And then later I learned what he was really talking about was this kind of, this idea that I guess got really big at a certain point, I don't know if it still is, that if you just think about something, then that will happen. You know? So we think about, I want this kind of promotion, you know, we think about, I want, to have, happy, whatever, you know, new car, new house, new place to live, you know. Maybe, a new girlfriend, something like that. And just thinking about it, our mind kind of picks out the various elements in a situation and leads us to that particular outcome. And actually, in Buddhist theory, there is an element to that. This is one of the kind of principles that underpin these kind of temporal things that we go out to look for. Go to look for new houses, new cars, new jobs, all these kind of things. And what underpins this law of attraction is what the Buddha calls merit. Kind of this, it's called punya. It basically means is that by doing good actions, actions that are based on giving, actions that are based on restraining ourselves in morality, actions that are based on practicing meditation, then what we actually do there is we generate a kind of leaning in our mind. Yeah. In other words, there's this conscious aspect to our minds and an unconscious aspect. Yeah. Just like in this law of attraction, you know, there's certain things that we get unconsciously attracted to and pull ourselves towards. And of course, there's things that we overtly try to grab. But this is where this starts to interact, where these kind of looking for stone implements, iron implements, information, all these material things start to interact with our quest for happiness, is that what actually inclines our mind to achieve these things is doing good, is giving things away. This is a really ironic thing about the way these inclinations function in our mind, is that giving stuff away is what inclines our mind to have a lot of stuff. Ironic, eh? Another one of the ones that inclines is, what inclines people's minds to power is being happy when other people do well. It's kind of this mudita, you know, feeling happy when other people do well. What inclines our minds towards beauty, having a beautiful face, beautiful complexion, you know, people who have a appealing physical characteristics, is non-anger, not getting angry, you know. But the paradox of all this kind of thing is that what do we see happens when people achieve their temporal aims and they get rich? Sometimes they can get really stingy. What do we see happens when people achieve their temporal aims and gain power? You know, sometimes they get really upset when other people gain power, right? Or what do we see happens, you know, when people who are, some people, not all, who become really attractive and beautiful, some models are infamous for having terrible tempers, being very angry people, you know? And so there's actually a pattern, a causal pattern that underlies all of this. And this is kind of one of the things that the Buddha calls, talks about samsara, you know? It's the ironic thing about samsara, the ironic thing about the inclinations of our minds towards temporal pleasures, towards temporal happiness, is that when our mind inclines towards these things, actually they're not bad to have, right? I mean, it's good to have a nice place to live in and, you know, better to be healthy than unhealthy. When our mind inclines towards these things, what happens is, in the achieving of these things, it becomes more difficult to put the practices into place that led us there. That's kind of the ironic thing. When a person becomes very wealthy, a lot of people start to want stuff from them. It becomes very difficult to tell who's a genuine friend and who's not. And to achieve that wealth and to keep it, you sometimes have to protect it. This kind of attitude of protecting your wealth, of doing all these things, inclines the mind away from generosity, from giving it away. And also, the friends you tend to associate with when a person becomes very wealthy spend money on expensive things. So if you want to hang around with them, you've got to spend your money on expensive things, and that means you can't be giving it all away. And so in the act of consuming this wealth, we undercut the inclination in our mind that led us there in the first place. And it's similar with power. When a person is powerful, they sometimes become intoxicated with that power. If they want to keep it, they have to stop other people from getting it. And so they lose the happiness that comes when other people do well. Oh, I'm around people who are doing well. This is great. Losing that, it undercuts their ability to have it. And so it's in just this way that there's a principle behind what leads us to temporal happiness. There's a principle behind what leads us to the pain that comes when we lose these things. And it's just this, that in the act of one of these, it's just one of these, in the act of consuming the things that we crave for, we often lose the very things that led us to get them. The things that we really crave when we get them, and we consume them, we lose what we did to produce them. So this is one of the things. And when we lose them, we suffer. So when a person sees these kind of patterns, these are patterns that we can train ourselves to become skilled in. Because actually, the Buddha said this. He said, don't be afraid of acts of merit. In other words, it's not a bad thing. It's not like we're terrible people if somebody has a lot of wealth. It's not like you're a terrible person if somebody has a lot of power. It's not like you're a terrible person if somebody's very physically attractive, if they're very long-lived, if somebody's very intelligent. These aren't bad things at all. Actually, they're things that we take in the Buddhist path, as another principle, instead of consuming them, instead of grabbing onto them and losing them, we take them and reinvest them. We take the happiness that we get, this space of mind, this inclination towards good things, and we reinvest it even more in even more good qualities, in the practice of meditation even more, to see how far we can take it. How far can we take our good qualities? How high can we make them go? And all of this has a purpose to this, because when we recognize, when we see that just the very things that we crave, the things that we grab onto, in the act of consuming them, in the act of having them, in the act of becoming them, we gradually start to let go of the things that led us there and they fall away. You know? In the act of consuming these things and having them, we somewhat undercut our ability to keep them. And when we see this pattern over and over again in everything, we start to wonder, is there a way out of this pattern? You know? Is there a way to escape it entirely? Is there something that lies beyond it? Just beyond having the Stone Age and the Bronze Age, the Iron Age, Computer Age, Robot Age, all these ages arising and falling. Is there something beyond these things? Something beyond temporal happiness, something beyond temporal pleasure. And this is what leads us to the Buddhist search, the search that the Buddha recommended. What is there that when I do it, is there an end to this entire mass of stress? Is there an end to this entire mass of dukkha? And so when we have this as our goal, when we look and see these things, okay, I'm going, okay, it's good to have all these temporal pleasures, but is there something better? Then we start to think in terms of reinvestment. In other words, we start to think in terms of, we have all these good qualities, you know, these good things that we've built up in our life. What can I do to make them even higher for finding a permanent escape? Yeah. So I remember when I first started meditating, I'd notice after a meditation retreat, you'd go for 5 days and you'd be really, you know, putting a lot of hours into meditation, suffering through a lot of physical pain. And through the whole retreat, I'd be thinking, you know, when this retreat ends, I'm going to get myself some, you know, like ice cream or whatever it is that I could spend this kind of buildup of energy that I got. Or I'd meditate and think, I'm going to really meditate for the sake of, you know, getting more concentration and getting better grades. And kind of spend it on these better grades. Spend it on trying to have, you know, better whatever it is. And of course, you have to spend a little. But then when we see these patterns, we start to think on ourselves, why don't I take these qualities and try to reinvest them even further? You know, so instead of taking this energy that I got from these good qualities and going out and partying, why don't I see if I can become even more generous, have even more strong sila, have even more focus in my meditation, and see where that leads? And so this is an attitude that doesn't just lead us back to the temporal things, doesn't just lead us back to houses and cars that we consume, we have for a while, and then we lose. And then when they're gone, we don't have anything. Just to relationships where we grab them, we consume them, we have them for a while, and they're gone. And then when they're gone, we don't have it. You know? Just to possessions, just to our bodies, our own sense of our physical body, where we have it, we think it's ours, and it goes away, and then we suffer. So we incline our mind to reinvest these things, reinvest these qualities, to find something that goes beyond them all, to try to find a permanent state of happiness. And this is where a true spiritual quest begins. This is where a true type of search for happiness goes. And the nice thing about it is that it includes a lot of good things. And this is why the Buddha said his path is something that's good. You know, it's good in the beginning. Good when we first start to set out on this path, first start to try to develop wholesome qualities. It's good in the middle when we first start to learn how to concentrate our mind, learn to make our mind peaceful, find a happiness independent of external situations, find a happiness and joy in the practice of Dhamma itself. And it's good towards the end, when we permanently cut defilements, if we know for ourselves, we become one of the Buddha's noble disciples. And it's good when it finally ends, and we are finally able to find a true end to suffering, something we can know for ourselves. Yeah. So those are some thoughts for today on the different ages. And since I'm posting this video, I don't know if people are going to go on Wikipedia and look up the different ages and tell me if I... Maybe there's some in between there. I don't know. But hope that everybody has a great night, and wishing you all the best.